Call the House State Affairs Committee meeting to order. Today is Friday, March 8th, 1991. The time is 8:35. Have Representatives Cabina, Moyer, Baker, and Miller present. We do have a quorum. This morning we'll be having an overview by the Department of Public Safety. We do have Commissioner Burton here with us. We'll possibly be taking up further consideration of House Bill 67 relating to the impoundment of mistreated animals. And we will be taking up House Bill 4, the Legislative Ethics Act. At this time, I'd like to ask Commissioner Burton if you'd join us, sir. We've asked the commissioner to come. He was here one day and gave us a little talk, but to give us a further overview of his department and where he thinks things are headed this year and how things will change under his leadership.
Is there anything? I have a crystal ball. Mr. Chairman, thank you for inviting me here. And I have Ken Bischoff, Director of Administrative Services Department. We're lucky enough that Major Murphy, the Acting Director of the Troopers, was in town, so we drug him happily up here this morning. And Captain Stearns, who was temporary assigned to my office, has been working on the contract jails, and he's the one that's been riding herd on the animal impoundment bill, as you know, so he's here too, so we can get into that. We had, as you say, a very brief discussion, and we had to run to something else last time, and I know how that is. We provided, I think each of you received, we've condensed down in as plain a language as we can in various facets of the department in the overview paper that you have. I don't know if you've had a chance to see that, but that pretty well explains our overview of the latest information that we have on the budget, which is still in a state of flux somewhat. We're here, be happy to have the people with me if you can write the details, answer any questions they have.
Well, maybe we could talk about a couple different things. My understanding is that the department is attempting to not cover some areas in the state that the department feels should be covered by local people. I think we're talking one big area would be the Hillside area in Anchorage. Could you tell us what the status of that is within the department?
Well, I hate the semantics. It's not that we're attempting not to cover anything. Attempting to respond to the needs statewide with the resources available. Now, as far as the Hillside, most people are unaware that prior to statehood, every municipality had to provide a police department, had to have their own jail. Since statehood, that's not true. Recently, the man, in fact, closed down their police department, some recently. But as pertains to the Hillside, we're about somewhere near 35,000 to 40,000 population. We've been doing that with Sergeant 7 Troopers and with most of the full time with 3 CIB investigators. We worked 150 sexual assault cases in that area last year. And the question that I have to arrive at in my mind in facing another cutback, which if you look at the history of the department, we've experienced none of the cutbacks for the last 10 years. What level of service do I owe the people at Hillside as opposed to the people in McGrath or Tyonic or St. George? Some of these people call and they are less able to provide their own service than the people at Hillside are probably able to. Have the Charter Foundation in which to answer that problem by voting it as a service area, but you take another area that's a second class or unincorporated area. You know, do I owe the Hillside any higher level of protection than I owe those people? And some of them are in a position, they call for a trooper and we'll say, yeah, there'll be one next Thursday at 2 o'clock if we're lucky. So that's the kind of thing. We're not saying I'm trying to balance this and see where this budget ends up and what do I do with the mandates and law. We're the only department in Alaska that's required to enforce all the criminal law in the state of Alaska. And that's what I'm looking at.
Is there some type of a legal issue here that, and let me say I'm very sympathetic to this issue and to the municipalities paying their own way on this, but is there a legal issue about them having to vote to the people of that area having to vote and to have their
service area to
make that service area so they're taxed for it, and if they don't,
well,
you have to cover them? Or?
Well, if they don't, they come under my jurisdiction. At what level do I have to cover them? I guess that's the question. If you look in the statutes, home rule municipalities, the only three powers that are mandated are tax assessment, education, and land use, or planning and zoning. they have all the other powers of municipality if they elect to do so. And then when we got in from and I'm not a lawyer, but I've been around since before state and watched this evolve. We had a municipality, had a borough. They decided to combine, and one of the things in that sort of simplistic is that the municipality could not force the entire borough if they combined to have to accept all these powers, and so they created service areas. And Mr. Baker's probably far more knowledgeable of that, having been on the Anchorage Assembly than I am, but if I'm wrong, I agree with that, but that's the way it is. And so they've consistently voted not to do that in that particular area.
Okay, so your plan of action on it?
Wait and see what happens to the budget and what level of service I've got to provide people statewide and what are the demands on. You know, the comparable area, I looked at a municipal police department that has a comparable area as far as population and geographic area, and Juneau comes about as close. And as you know, I was police chief here at one time too, but the population here is a little smaller than the population contained in the hillside. There's some differences. You have a city, but there are some industrial sites up in the hillside area. You've got a golf course, you've got a ski resort, and then the hillside, you also have probably everybody in Anchorage at one time around that goes up in there besides the people that live there. They border on that state park, and people hike up in there. You have search and rescue problems. As you read about the avalanche, which killed an individual, we were involved in that. Those kind of things make a demand on us. But if you compare that to Juneau, and we're doing that basically with a sergeant and six troopers assigned for patrol, basic patrol, and the CIB responding, spending about $800,000, the Juneau Police Department, with a little smaller population, a little smaller geographic area, has 33 commissioned officers, a total force of somewhere like 50 people, kind of their clerical, and a $4.5 million budget. Now, if the state's desire for me to continue that service, then we would do it at an adequate level. There's a little difference to be made up.
Representative Shilkat.
Thank you. Commissioner, I'm sorry I'm late. I would hope that Representative Baker adequately filled in as far as the hillside goes, but on a quick question.
Yes, sir.
What if, and the way I understand the situation at the municipality now is that one of the assembly members is trying a new tact and is probably going to have a little difficult time achieving it. We sent out a questionnaire that I believe asked for two questions. We talked about the problem in the hillside, and we said, would you like to have police protection by the troopers or the municipal police? My question to you is, if the hillside area taxed itself $1 million and requested the troopers, would that do anything in your mind if in other words they chose that they wanted the state troopers to continue to patrol the area and they were willing to tax themselves accordingly?
Well, that's a policy question. I don't think I can answer it, Representative Joe.
Well, that would be a policy question for your department. Is that correct?
Well, it would be a policy question probably from one of the Department of Law, whether it would be entering a contractual relationship in that regard, and from the governor's office, it would have to be discussed at that level.
You have any situation statewide where you're in that type of an agreement now, whether it's fishing game protection or?
Not to my knowledge. We used to, years ago, we had a number of contracts, and this is right after statehood, in small municipalities. They didn't have enough money to afford a police department, so we had a combination in some of those areas where they paid for half of a trooper, and we paid for the other half.
You remember those?
And then the problem we got into that then is that the trooper was responsible for working for us, and he was going down and objectively enforcing the law. And some communities had people that they felt that the city council didn't like certain people getting tickets and those kind of things. So the relationship was not a harmonious one, and so we decided it was best not to continue that type of thing.
If you get the time, Commissioner, I'd surely like to know, maybe you could have somebody do a little research and see whether you'd be even available to do something like that. I know it's one of the questions that we're facing on the hillside now.
Well, we can do most anything. I have enough money and people to do it with.
So I was referring to calling your attorney or something, your general, and seeing if you think it over yourself. Maybe it's an option that's being considered now.
Okay, I'd look at it.
Thanks. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
The record should show that Representative Shilkat and Representative Bruckman have both joined us. Commissioner?
Yes, sir.
I noticed in your budget that you cut 47 part-time positions from Fish and Wildlife. or at least reduce those if I read that.
Well, part of the history of that, and I'd like to have Ken Bischoff come up because he's been involved in some of
this. Why don't you just pull up a chair and join us?
But I'm talking from a different historical perspective, which is not as recent as some of the other people. But if you look at the staffing of Fish and Wildlife over the last 10 or 12 years, the permanent full-time officer staff has gone down from about 120 today to about 84. And they attempted to supplant that, which was an old territorial way that the old federal Fish and Wildlife always did. They hired summer temporaries. And these are, I think, are the positions we're talking about. Is that not right, Ken?
Yes. Mr. Chairman, for the record, my name is Ken Bischoff. I'm the admin director for the department. With respect to your question about the seasonal positions in Fish and Wildlife, it's my understanding the governor has not formally submitted his amended budget yet, but the amendments that have been preliminarily approved would show a decrease of 17 seasonal positions in Fish and Wildlife at this point. The original reduction was 47.
So we're still going to get amended budgets from the governor?
That's my understanding.
But the thing is here, I'd rather cut temporaries who are not as well trained in order than to cut full-time officers.
All right, is this the basically the enforcement division?
Yes.
And I know I've heard in my area, certainly over and over again in Prince William Sound, that if we had more enforcement out there, we'd sure be a lot better off. That people are fishing without licenses, that you guys don't have enough people to ever go out. I've lived there umpteen years. I've never once been checked for a fishing license. I see that you've got the Montague is destined to be mothballed or sidelined. Is that correct for the entire year? Or?
The Vigilant, I believe, is the patrol vessel you're referring to, Mr. Chairman, and it is being reduced approximately 20 to 25% of its patrol base.
The Montague may not be under your department. That may be fishing game. That's fishing game. And I know the one officer that we really have in Valdez there, he doesn't have time. He doesn't really have a boat that is appropriate for getting out there in a speedy manner and to cover it. I realize we want to, that you guys are mandated to make certain cuts. And I guess on that, I'm trying to get to is what level of service do we really want to provide? Or do you look at that? Are you saying, is this group doing what they should, and do they have the resources to do it? Or did you just go in and say, well, we got to make cuts, and so we're going to sort of take them from every department? Or
if you understand, this happens every change of administration. I came in 2 days before my first budget hearing where the budget was prepared by the prior administration. What you will get from me next year is going to be an entirely different looking area. We all having to work for that. Ask me of my background with the department that I left 12 years ago and had more resources in it than it does now. I guess you could arrive at my answer. We are supporting the governor's approach the best way that we can with our department, that he wants to reduce the cost of government. With what we have, this is what our proposal is. And that's about what I'll say on that regard.
Well, I guess if you wanted to be appointed commissioner, you wouldn't be able to say much else.
I didn't ask for the job. I don't know. I had it before.
Representative Bruckman.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And through the chair, Mr. Commissioner, I'd like to go back to the state troopers and the court service officers. I'm very concerned about pulling out the troopers from not only the hillside that I represent, but from other parts of Alaska. And we concur with Representative Chiquette that we are looking at contract service if this were to go. But I understand through state law that protection has to be consistent throughout the state. That it's difficult, in other words, for your department to pull from one area and not another. Are you looking at your rules and regulations and finding that if you can just go ahead and pull these people from different communities at a date certain before the community has time to
you were here, we addressed that subject earlier on, is that, you know, I have responsibility statewide. So, and as I said, the question is, do I owe the people who live on Hillside who are better probably positioned and are already part of a structured government and have the ability to vote to do so, provide their own service? Do I owe them a higher level service than I do people in unincorporated or second-class city like McGrath that has a budget of about $225,000 a year? They call for a trooper and they're lucky if they get one in 2 days. That's what I'm looking at from my standpoint, is you know, what's fair. Certainly, there's not enough to cover the entire state.
And I appreciate the time you spent with me last week in explaining some of these things. We are looking at contract service because the troopers have provided a level of service that I think my constituents are quite satisfied with, and would certainly would like to keep that same service. But I'm very concerned about the court service officers. I have a letter from Judge Rowland, I believe, indicating their concern over changing those folks, pulling them out. Could you explain the history a little bit? And I think if you would include, I believe that the judges themselves wanted to keep have those officers in place, have their own court service folks, not troopers who would go other places, you know, wouldn't spend full time.
Well, prior to Judge Rowland becoming a judge, we had, with statehood, this is a thing that we took over that was prior to statehood, was being done by the Marshal's Office. And with the Department of Public Safety in Alaska, compared to other states, we're several things. We're the Highway Patrol, we're the State Police, and we're the Sheriff's Office for the state of Alaska. Chapter 22 of the statutes, I'm the Chief Executive Officer of the Supreme Court, and it mandates what our responsibilities are according to the statute. It always has in the state of it. And it's kind of interesting reading if you read that. And the responsibilities and what I may or may not do as far as providing that service for the court. We haven't fully fulfilled that. Over the years, we've reached agreements to where they've had other people come in and do the bailiff's service and attend those things. We took that over statehood. We took some of the people who were old deputy marshals at that time, came into the department, and we continued that, which is the civil section, serving process, holding what's commonly called sheriff sales, those kind of things. That all goes along with that. And that's gone back and forth. We had full troopers doing it, and then we had a position called JSO, Judicial Service Officers, and then it came along like work, like pay, so we had troopers doing it again. And now, since I've left, and I'll let Ken address this a little more fully, it's back to CSO, but it boils down to what your point is, I think. If we're looking at budget cuts, CSO's responsibilities and what they're allowed to do are very limited in scope compared to what a full state trooper can do. In fact, there are occasions, I understand, where CSOs get into situations where we have to call a trooper to go and do things for them. So I'm looking at it strictly from a management of the ability to have some flexibility in what people can do if I've got to reduce the number of people I've got doing it.
Right. My concern is that flexibility and that the trooper that would take over the position of CSO would be pulled out of the courthouse. Other duties around the state are within the immediate area. In other words, they wouldn't be there to guard the judges.
You misunderstood what I said. Currently, sometimes the CSO positions get involved when we have to send a trooper to do them.
Right.
This would eliminate that.
Eliminate that problem. And the cost, the rate of pay.
There's a little difference. They got a pretty good size pay raise a while back, but I think there's some, the CSOs, which you people had here for a year or two, was a negotiated thing through, I think, Mr. Piazza's shop over there. And there's somewhere around 15% difference. I'm just, from what I've heard, I don't know if Ken could certainly address that, and Bob Piazza could certainly address it.
Would the trooper keep their grandfathered salaries in
their
position?
The troopers make more.
Right. Okay, if they took over the CSO position.
This stuff, and we're talking about while you're on this, I'm putting the airport police over others too. You know, well, another class. And I think it's kind of like the Army. Some guys drive tanks, some are in the artillery, and some are infantry, but they're all soldiers. And I think, you know, there's a little bit of management flexibility that allows a little better delivery service and get out of these different classes of employees. That's just the way I feel. I'm in charge of the department, so I express myself.
Is the governor's amended budget going to change your position on court service officers?
We'll have to see it.
Mm-hmm.
We're working every day on what you get.
At this point, the amendments we expect will not provide money to restore the CSO class.
Right. Griffin Moyer?
I'm tied my hand up.
Oh, I'm sorry, I thought you did before. Representative Choquette.
Mr. Chairman, I tried to let you know he was just scratching.
Scratching?
He was scratching. Mr. Burton.
Yes, sir.
And Representative Buckman, I don't believe that the commissioner is the boss in this situation. I think all of us are held hostage by the bureaucracy, but in this particular case, when you're told to cut your budget, you look at the areas that are going to be least effective and try to make the cuts. The thing that bothers me, and I'll voice the chairman's thoughts, is this, these part-time wildlife, or part-time fish and game officers. I see guys snagging fish and bringing them up into the bushes. I see commercial boats coming in after it's dark and getting a little close to the mouth of the river. And all of us here at this table and in most of the other areas in the legislature have got a real strong feeling of protecting our natural resources. When we fail to provide the means to do that, I think the commissioner is in very, very seriously jeopardizing his role by statute. And it bothers me to see reductions in public safety that allow a person to carry out his job. I'm one of these people that campaigned on a reduced budget, as most of us here did. And I see that what we've done in this budget is respond to a directive and I don't necessarily have to like it.
Thank you. Commissioner, one thing I noticed in going through this that several of the areas where you see reductions in your budget proposals are not general funds but other funds. For example, DMB, $165,000 in other funds where you have an increase. Could someone maybe explain why we have a lot of other funds and we're not reducing, and especially equate that to the statement at the top of page 8 where it says DMV's ability to provide timely services will be noticeably reduced.
Yes, sir. We've talked about program receipts with the budget people. I think you can explain this.
Mr. Chairman, the program receipt issue is a fairly hot topic. The governor's office continues to review it. As far as the Department of Public Safety is concerned, I think we're not alone amongst other agencies. Over the last several years, the cuts during 86 and 87, general funds have been very difficult to obtain continued-based services. As a reaction to that, where we had statutes that authorized fees to be charged to allow the public who are willing to pay for services to pay for them and receive those services, program receipts have developed to supplement the scarce general funds. Because we are funding programs with program receipts that are not in the general fund base, those tend to be lower priority programs. And so those would generally be the first programs to be reduced in a budget reduction exercise. So program receipts are currently defined as general funds in the budget statewide.
In other words, these other funds are program receipts, which in essence still are general funds. That's what you said. They're not federal dollars.
They're categorized as general funds.
Representative Moyer and then Baker.
Well, Mr. Baker was first, but I could do a short follow-up on program receipts. And I don't sit on your subcommittee, so my apologies. I'm not as familiar as I would be otherwise with your budget. But in the area of program receipts, in the fire training area, there's both training and permit review, and I understand those have been reduced. Are they still at that point, or has there been some rethinking on those program issues?
Mr. Chairman, there has been no change in the fire training budget at this point.
Except that my understanding is that you'll be charging or either raising the fees that you charge up.
Mr. Chairman, at this point, our budget does not include a request to receive and expend authority to utilize those program receipts to provide those services which have been reduced in the FY19 budget.
Let the record show that Representative Grunberg has joined us. Representative Baker.
Mr. Chairman, first Commissioner, I guess I'd like to pay you a compliment. This document, though I have my fingers in various pages, is really concise and I think very good. Representative Berkman and I sit on another high budget unit that we get one or two pages for much fewer dollars, and this is really a very good document. Maybe you can hand it in a budget unit. First of all, on the crime lab component, I recall a couple of years ago at least that we had the lab there, but there was no manpower to staff it. I see that we have 25 or 26 positions in there now. What's the status of that?
Mr. Chairman, that, then I want to talk about the lab.
Okay. With respect to the lab, the governor's amended budget is, as of when it's submitted, is adding $361,000 in three positions to correct all of the initial problems with the original submission, and they should be able to be fully staffed and operate and maintain pace with the workload.
We're also working with the Commissioner of Health and Social Services, and he's very, very cooperative. In fact, brought it up the opportunity through some money that he may have available. We can fund a position for a state forensic pathologist, because we did over 400 autopsies in that last year in that lab. And some of the things that I plan on wanting to do is we have over 50 unsolved homicides statewide right now, and I want to put together a team, depending on how much budget we can shift some people, create a statewide homicide investigator. I think it's kind of criminal. That's not a pun, but there's over 50 murdered citizens in Alaska and from various communities in various jurisdictions within the state. But take our jurisdiction very seriously, and I think that's a role of the state organization ought to play, and the lab's going to play an important part of it. And we're working very closely with Commissioner Mallow on doing some things at his laboratories that he can do and ours, and where we can interface and we can save some money and we can be far more effective and efficient, which are the two words I like to apply to anything that I do. Does that answer your question, Mr. Chairman?
Yes. Two other questions, Mr. Chairman, if I might. On the Violent Crimes Compensation Board, it's basically $1,000,000, $904,000. Obviously, that's most of that's in which. And payout receipts. Is that an escrow fund that is set up, and so those funds are carried forward from year to year, or when the budget unit lapses, does it just disappear and go back into the general fund?
Mr. Chairman, this is an annual operating appropriation which lapses June 30th at the end of each fiscal year. It's not obligated or expensive.
Okay, and as a follow-up, can you give me a history as to what the annual payouts have been across the
Mr. Chairman, we have gone in cycles because starting in FY87 when the original cuts came down, there was discussion about eliminating the program entirely. It seemed for a couple of years after that the public assumed that they were eliminated and claims were reduced for a couple of years, but they've been growing and stabilizing about at the level of the current budget. So we haven't been lapsing any significant dollars.
Okay, well, I was just thinking if we need more cops on the street, this is a worthwhile program, but boy, if it's at the expense of uniformed officers, $1,000,000 budget, quite a few cops.
Not as many as you used to.
I know, at least maybe 7 or 8 anyway. And the other budget component unit that I have a question on is the Highway Safety Planning Agency. Another $1,000,000. That's page 6.
Just what it does.
Well, can it?
You see, most of that's funded by other funds.
These are federal grant funds for a specific purpose.
Okay. Answers the question.
Yeah, we provide 40% of that has to go to municipalities, and out of that 40% for information, somewhere about 60 or 70% of the municipality money goes to Anchor.
Yes, I know it does. Thank you.
Okay.
Could you tell me how many positions in your entire budget you see as eliminated, full-time and part-time?
After looking at this for a few weeks, it seems like hundreds, but I'm sure it's not.
Is that on that first page, or just the 47?
That, Mr. Chairman, would be the original 17. Budget submission. At this point, we anticipate losing 35 permanent full-time positions and 28 permanent part-time positions.
35 and 28. And are you turning back those PCM numbers, or are you just leaving those?
These will actually be deleted off of the position control system.
Representative Breckman?
Thank you. A quick comment. I think there's two things mandated in our Constitution. That's to provide an adequate education and an adequate public health and safety statewide to all our citizens. By reducing this budget so drastically, I see that we just can't provide adequate coverage and protection that we've become accustomed to and is necessary, especially in today's age where crimes are increasing. And as Commander-in-Chief of your department, I'd appreciate your support and encouraging the government to put the monies, not only put money, you know, what monies that he's giving us back in, but more. And I'm concerned about the Council on Domestic Violence. That cut back, and are you recommending that it be taken out of public safety and so on?
Well, I'm looking at reorganization. I'll tell you, just quite frankly, as those of you at the table who know me know that I'm pretty honest, if nothing else, sometimes too much so. People have a tendency to look at public safety and they see the total budget. When they look at public safety, most people see a blue-suited trooper. Well, most people do. And you got trooper, you got fish and wildlife, you've got motor vehicles. Any one of those three programs somewhere else would be a major program. Plus all the other things we have. And so the basic mission of the department is law enforcement. And the Constitution, you know, as you brought it up, mentions that the government be forming not more than 20 departments, but will be formed as near as possible to like functions and responsibilities and what they do. I think that the domestic violence program is a very important one. It's been a great assistance to the policemen in the field. But for me, in the position I'm in now, if I've got something that's $6 million sitting in my budget and people equate me with doing nothing but law enforcement, and I don't, selfishly, I think I need to get what I would call the inflation out of my budget and pare it down to our basic mission. I think that probably that the and I know that they want to stay there. I've heard all the feelings about it. But I think that more rightfully belongs in Health and Social Services over with alcohol and drug program where they can work together.
Right. But didn't you say the other day that there were, even on the hillside, there were 107 cases of sexual abuse?
Criminal sexual abuse. That's what we do. This domestic violence has nothing to do with that.
Well,
it's a shelter place.
I think it does. And
they have no enforcement authority.
I disagree that I think it does come into play there, and especially preventive measures. But cutting back on DMV even limits the ability of the troopers to do their job.
Well, you asked me how I felt.
Right. Well, then I would ask you to support an increase in the budget and and understand our concerns.
I support the governor's program, and as much as we can, he wants to reduce the cost of state government, and this is our portion of it that I have to support.
Well, you understand the problems we have, Commissioner, and we have obviously constituents coming back to us and saying, yeah, we want to reduce the budget, but we want to reduce the people that are sitting over in the offices making all the paperwork. We don't want the people that are out here providing services to the citizens of Alaska reduced, and obviously it makes it quite difficult even when you put in your own budget proposal, this was going to reduce services or this is going to make us slower, although I commend you for being honest about it.
Mr. Chairman, as long as we understand each other's position.
Sir. Representative Moyer.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I too need to say what Representative Baker said. Some documents, their value is gauged on just their length, but this one is chock full of good information. I appreciate it.
We try hard.
The only thing it's missing, I guess, is an organization part. Commissioner, if I recall your background, you did some service in the South Pacific, Marianas?
First year I retired, I went out in the Justice Department as an LEA program with the Saipan for the year.
Saipan. I had the pleasure of visiting the Marshall Islands and in meeting with their government officials.
when I stepped into the room, one of the first things I saw on the wall was a Sitka Cooper Training Academy diploma.
Yes, sir.
Of all things in the middle of the South Pacific.
Yes, sir. I started that when I was active.
And I understand a successor, I think it was Sunberg, eliminated the opening academy to other interested jurisdictions. And the sentiment there was they really liked coming to Alaska for several reasons. I'll just name them as I recall them. They are isolated like Alaska. Of course, they're a small, tiny island. It couldn't be farther from our size, but they're isolated. They're formerly a territory like we were. They had problems with indigenous populations and alcoholism, and they felt coming to our academy gave them just the kind of training they needed, yet we shut them off. Are you open in your administration marketing your academy and other locales?
I'm glad you, I'm the one, while I was in Saipan, I talked to Trust Territory Government about their training program, and I linked that up, and that's how we got started, because I spent a couple of years in Southeast Asia also and other places. I saw the similarities. We replaced the palm trees, the spruce trees, a few other things. You know, there's a lot of similarity. So that's how that got evolved. And yeah, last go around when I was commissioner here, we used to do 18 to 20, 21 months of training and 12 months at the academy. In fact, by training for other organizations and departments, it was a profit center, if you know. We were generating, charging people for training, and I certainly want that academy utilized. I'm just going to have the former academy commander, who's a major proponent, retired, who's one of the key people there, is going to do a training assessment needs for me, what we used to do, what we're doing, and what we could do. And, we're looking at that very closely. I'm very tender to that academy, yeah.
So that could be an area of program assistance.
Well, yes, and you know, if we can get that recognition, although we realize by the Constitution we can't, you know, have specified funds going, but no dedicated funding. But we're talking very loudly about DMV is a good example. We generate over $20-some million a year to that department.
Well, there's no dedicated funding, but I know for a fact that the finance committees on both sides look at the funds that are brought in, and while they may not be designated specifically to that program, they certainly look at that and realize when a program is paying its own way.
In fact, in looking at your list of types of people that have been trained at the academy over the years, you forgot me.
Is that right?
Yeah.
What type were you?
Environmental field officer.
Oh, okay.
I took a week basic law enforcement training course at the academy, and I just don't happen to see that as one of the types of people been trained there.
A lot of them. A lot of different ones. And we've been really good, and it's good for relations. You brought up Saipan, like, is Representative Joquette went to Saipan after I was there too, and he has.
I saw a picture on the wall.
I was in Saipan too. I missed that.
I was in the jail.
Yeah.
Is this being recorded?
If I may, Mr. Chairman.
Excuse me, Mr. Chairman.
Continue representing.
Just a follow-up question to the CSOs. It sparked something in my mind. Is there consideration been given to hiring private security for the courtrooms in lieu of CSOs, or when troopers aren't shorthanded?
That consideration with me, and I've since I retired, I've also had my own security and armored car company, which I recently sold out. But the problem with dealing with the state, if you've got a contract, is you deal with low bidders. And I don't want to badmouth anybody, but you lose some sort of quality with that. And I'm just not, at this point, would have to be a pretty high quality thing to even consider for me. And of course, that's up to the court, because the statutory requirement by Title 22 makes me the Chief Executive Officer of the Supreme Court. Now I got promoted Commander in Chief. I don't get a pay raise. Pay raise, but that would be great. But no, you consider anything. I don't just discard anything out of hand. But right now, it's the statutory requirements that we're trying to fulfill.
What is your position on collective bargaining with your employees?
My position on collective bargaining with employees, I think collective bargaining is fine. Sometimes, to be real honest, I have a little problem with the way the binding arbitration works.
And all the troopers are under that category, under FARA, is that correct?
Oh, certainly, yes.
Does that include Fish and Wildlife? That includes your CSOs also?
And the airport police, and I don't know who all bought the thing.
Would you rather they had the right to strike, Commissioner?
Sir?
Would you rather they had the right to strike?
Yeah, I think I could work with that.
Oh, the right to strike is for the fighting hour for the troopers and Fish and Wildlife?
Oh.
Do you have any intention of proposing any such legislation?
I don't personally, because I can't introduce legislation either.
I take the offer in some way, where you're done?
You know somebody that can. No, actually, I think I was done, Mr. Chairman.
Representative Chappelle, let me just say, please, that so everybody knows where we're at. I do want to save some time so that we can move out House Bill 4 today, which will take us at least, say, 15 minutes or so. So I'd like to keep you here for another maybe 10 minutes, Commissioner, and then I know we'll have another chance at you. We will have confirmation hearings with this committee in the near future. So, Representative Choquette.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'll be brief.
Oh, I'm sorry. Go right ahead.
Thank you. Commissioner, I see a couple areas that the budget can be reduced. On page 12, you have prisoner transport. Now, I know pretty much the way this system has operated in the past. Corrections has got a bit of money. Public safety's got some money. You use one, when it runs out, you use the other. Currently, we're in the correction subcommittee. We're combining that money and putting it, I believe, all through the Department of Corrections. I'd like to know what the figure is that you have in your budget. I tried to find it for prisoner transport as it refers to between institutions and among that.
A little bit of that on that, too. By statute, you know, we're required to transport all prisoners.
Yes, I understand, Commissioner.
But what's happened is that I found a couple memorandums of understanding under the fact that sometimes they do and sometimes we don't. Of course, security decision is required in certain populations. You got to move people. Whether they really need to be moved or not. So that's kicked in. But to answer your question as far as money, I'm not too sure. I have some of the same questions.
Yeah.
So we're addressing them.
Let me try. Mr. Chairman, and to try to help provide some information to Representative Choquette, I believe the representative may be responding from Corrections Subcommittee meeting yesterday regarding a discussion of supplementals. Supplementals, not the operating budget, the FY91 supplemental, and whether or not it there was a question of a potential duplication of approximately $75,000, is my understanding. In our contract jails budget, we provide for at least aircraft that through an agreement with corrections staff uses our lease plane to transport certain prisoners. That is the only duplication in our budget, that possible duplication. I don't know what the results of that meeting were. Maybe it is.
Well, we have that money earmarked and identified, and I'd appreciate it. The same coming from you, if you would just let me know a breakdown on the prisoner transport. And I'd also, Commissioner, like to say the same thing to you that I told Commissioner Haynes. You know, it's amazing. Apparently now the federal government has a contract, and the fly from Anchorage to Fairbanks is a heck of a lot cheaper on an airline through a bidding process by which they went into the airline and bid it per seat. It's almost half the price of what it costs to make a full fare ticket. In looking at ways that we can reduce our budget, I would like you to consider possibly putting out the bid X number of seats flying in the major areas, Anchorage, Juneau, Anchorage, Kenai, Anchorage, Kodiak, and see if we can't reduce our fare as did the federal government in between these areas. And I think you might be surprised. I know one of the problems that public safety and corrections face with prison transport is that, by golly, it happens Tuesday and you've got to transport them Wednesday or Thursday. Therefore, there's no way to take advantage of a two-week savings or anything like that. So just maybe you might wish to consider that. Thank you. Mr. Chairman, that's all.
Representative Greenberg.
Just to follow up on what Representative Choquette just said, Mr. Chairman, thank you. Maybe that's something that should be coordinated through the Department of Administration for all departments with the transportation so that we get some cost savings. Would you gentlemen be willing to do that, to explore that with?
Well, we have to coordinate almost everything I do through the Department of Administration now, so I guess it wouldn't hurt any more than it does.
I would appreciate that. Secondly, with respect, we have found with the Department of Corrections, I'm on the same subcommittee as Representative Choquette, that eliminating positions in situations where you have to have a certain amount of coverage, in that case in the jails, prisons, simply results in more overtime. And I can see you have thought of that. what effect, how much more overtime is your budget going to create if you eliminate these positions?
Calls for last. Get a guess.
With respect, we don't have an estimate on trooper overtime. That is limited. I know with Fish and Wildlife, they have taken all overtime that is not directly planned for a particular fishery or game management unit. If there's any occurrence out of their planned enforcement schedule, that will detract from other directly from game management units and commercial fisheries enforcement.
Well, my question is, do you plan to make some kind of a specific projection as to the amount of overtime this is going to create? Because I'm just speaking personally, I am concerned if we don't have frank and open budgeting. I don't want to see us incur a known and predictable expense and then see a department, and I'm not singling your department out, I want you to understand that, and see that department come back for a predictable supplemental, like we have done in the past, say, with the longevity bonus, only funding it for 11 months and knowing you're going to come back for a supplemental the next year, which is going to then count retroactively. My question is, can you predict the amount of overtime this will create, and can you give this committee in writing some kind of a prediction so we know what to expect?
Well, Mr. Chairman, we can give you a best guess.
That's all I ask.
But, and I hope you want to intimate you were trying to give you a frank and open budget.
I was not.
When you use that term, because we are doing our best
I know
with what we've had to work with. But the problem we have, you know, if Highways comes in here and says, we need $100 million to build 100 miles of road, you say no, you get $50 million, easy decision. They go out and build half the road. We'd say, we need this much to cover this many calls, this many crime. You say no, we're cutting it in half. The phone still rings.
Absolutely.
Hard for me to give you an exact, precise overtime thing representative, but we'll give you the best we can, but decision comes down, either we pay overtime or either we don't do the service.
You've hit on the nail on the head. Some things you can reduce in state government and some you can't. And it's an artificial, and it gives the legislature the impression that you can reduce certain types of essential services when you really can't. You can't have the prisons unmanned. You can't have the troopers unmanned. And we need to know that. And the real question is going to be, do you want these areas to go unprotected? Not, we're going to do it, but we're going to have to do it through overtime. And I find a body count, simply the number of people, is not an accurate reflection of what really goes on. If you could provide that, Mr. Chairman, I'd request that be done. Third, with respect to the domestic violence, having looked, you have several pages on there because you knew this was going to be something that we're going to be looking at very closely. And you're talking about cutting in your department, but the cut in your department would be, if you had your druthers, just to simply shifting it to the more appropriate department. You feel, and I feel, there may be some justification that it ought to be in the Department of Health and Social Services. I think you made a good case for that. But if we're going to do that, then it's got to be part of an executive order transferring that function.
Or to your statute.
Or a change in the statute. Yeah, either way. And so we can look at that program and see, regardless, I don't care where it is, but the question is what the level of funding. Do you plan to seek an EO or introduce a statute on that subject?
I'm in the process of discussion with the governor's office on several things that I want to do to see if we can't streamline management of the department. And that's one of the things that I selfishly look at, to be honest with you. That the overall mission of the department is public safety, you know, and that is a public safety issue, but in a different way than law enforcement.
I understand.
I've had 13 programs since I left, you know, with $22 million, but yet the troopers go down and the enforcement goes down.
I think there's merit in what you say, and I hadn't thought of it in those terms. I'd like to think about it, and I think the way to do it is to do it in conjunction with an EO, transferring it so that the legislature can take a look at it, or a statute, as you prefer. The final thing, and this, I don't want to take a lot of time because we're going to run out of time here, but I am concerned on an ongoing basis about the fact that the contract jails are under your department rather than under corrections. You want to make a brief comment on that?
Well, Well, that's something we've discussed with corrections. My looking at the statutes, you know, we've been doing it because we're not prohibited from doing it. But as far as I see, that's again back to the Constitution, the organization of state government, my functions. What am I doing in the jail business?
And I know the reasons that have been given, and without going into the details on the record here, I am not persuaded that they are good reasons. I agree with you. And I hope you pursue that. Thank you.
Rep. Simler.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Under the new state implementation plan, which is a document between EPA and state agencies, I believe that it calls for a stronger enforcement of the inspection maintenance program. I believe it asks the authority to revoke registration for those who aren't climate and tests. Do you support that, or what direction are you heading in on the I&M program?
That, I've had some discussion with Tommy from DEC the other day. They were going to meet about us helping again to enforce the municipality of Anchorage and their I&M test. We've got to talk about that because it's going to take some more time and effort at the DMV office, and we understand they want to do it. Yeah, we're looking at it, but I can't give you a deal on it. We do all kinds of things for the people now, and I want to take a real close look at it. If somebody comes and can help give me some money to deal with, I'll do anything anybody wants to pay for.
We are running out of time, my commissioner. I must say that I am impressed also by this document that you have provided because of its honesty. And if you just take the overview sheet, I'm just amazed at how honest you are in saying that all these things that nobody has argued that we don't need to do, or we should not be doing, or your department should not be doing, but you're admitting that every one of them are going to be, number one, less efficient, number two, aren't going to be done, number three, you're putting higher paid people into lower paid people's positions. You're point blank saying that we're not going to respond to as many basic health, safety, and law infractions, et cetera, et cetera. It's unbelievable to me. It's totally unbelievable. And we are out of time, and I'll let Representative Grindar go one more, but I think as a commissioner that you're going to be, I think, to provide our committee with some real justification for doing away with all these, and certainly convince me that you have the best interest of the state and the well-being and the health and the safety of this state in order to get confirmation out of this body. I mean, this is no threat or anything. I'm just saying that it's unbelievable to me that as a commissioner that you can come in and present this and be so honest about it. I guess a lot of them come in and say, well, we're going to do a better job when we cut it. I give you credit for at least admitting that you're going to do it.
Mr. Chairman, I think that's refreshing.
One hell of a lot of worse job. That's right.
I wish there were more people who are...
Mr. Chairman?
Rep. Sandberg.
Yeah, I'm impressed with what you've done here, too, and I think we need to deal with some of these things on the merits that we've been talking about. I just have one more area, and that is consumer protection. That's traditionally been a function of the Department of Law. Do you think it should remain there, or do you think that...
It's been abolished.
Well, traditionally.
You know, I really, being honest with you again, I have to give it a little more thought. I hadn't thought about it because the question's never been proposed to me. It's generally always in the Attorney General's office.
And that's mainly because they're civilly... They're civil actions and civil investigations. I'd like you to give that a little bit of thought. I'm not at all convinced that it should be moved or anything. Nobody suggested. It's caused me a little bit of question. And I don't need an answer now.
Okay. Well, I could see some merit if it had a really meaningful statewide criminal investigation bureau and civil fraud and consumer protection could be a part of that unit along with the other things that could, you know, make some sense.
Thank you.
One last point, Commissioner. Is your point of all this to... Is your point in all this, the cuts that you've made in this and the honesty that you have shown by indicating what those cuts really are going to do, a way of saying to the legislature, put all that money back in?
No, sir.
We're going to be able to go out and tell the public we've tried to make the cuts, but the legislature put it all back in?
No, sir. That's not my point at all. I guess, you know, I'm a little different. I'm the only commissioner that's been here before, and you're right, I do have a lot of feelings for this since I started driving around on Hudson Harbor. Highway Patrol in 1952, and I, you know, it's kind of close to my heart, this department and the function, and I'm serious about the delivery of service to those people out here. And I think that's where it came from, and you know, and I think the governor, you'll see that he has said, that told me that he's taking a very close look again at our budget, because he has told me repeatedly that these vital services have to be taken care of, and I think we will probably see that.
Has the governor actually, do you think, actually read a summary like this?
Oh, and be in the...
No, I mean the governor himself. Do you think he...
I couldn't answer that. You know, he's been pretty busy and so have I. I haven't had a chance to sit and talk with him.
I certainly hope he has the opportunity to utilize what his...
I've conveyed my concerns to everybody. He knows, you know, and I told him I'm not lying to anybody, and I certainly support what he wants to do, and I wouldn't have come back and probably gone to work for anybody else but him. I was retired after.
Well, thank you for your honesty, Commissioner, and thank you for taking your busy schedule to be here.
Anytime in my office, some of them have come and visit me in the office if you want to talk about more programs. Or, I like to talk about us any time I get a chance.
Thank you, sir.
Thank you.
David going to be here? Yeah.
I'm not sure. He hasn't arrived.
And I agree with that.
Fourth quarter. Oh, okay. I'm sorry, John.
Make him back to order, please. What is the committee we have before us? House Bill 4.
We also have before us your predecessor.
Representative Cato, would you like to join us?
Thank you, no, not right now. I'll catch you later.
We're almost done. We have before us House Bill 4, an act establishing legislative ethics commission and standards of conduct, et cetera, et cetera. We have gone through extensive hearings on this bill, hours upon hours. We have before us a draft committee substitute. What I would like to do is bring this committee substitute before us.
Mr. Chairman,
Representative Greenberg,
for the purposes of discussion only, I move the committee adopt the 3-7 committee substitute for House Bill 4.
Is there any objection? We do have a committee substitute before us then. John, would you join us?
Sure.
I have a couple questions. As I said, most of us have been here through some of the work sessions that we've had on this. All of us have been here, at least for part of it. John, on page 2. We're talking about 2461.110. I think we had some language in here that maybe should have been, that is on page 3. in the middle of that on line 7, this subsection does not prohibit the occasional or limited use of state property, etc. Weren't we supposed to have that same language in 110? Or am I mistaken?
No, you're not mistaken. I indicated that it was to be duplicated. It was in 110 originally. It was supposed to be duplicated here, and I indicated that it was supposed to be copied, but they apparently took it out.
Okay, instead. So that's one change, mm-hmm. that language would still stay.
Mr. Chairman?
Representative Bloomberg.
Since we're basically marking this thing up, I assume that'll be the subject of an amendment here. All right, is it your intent to add in the appropriate place to section 110 the entire sentence that begins page 2, line 7, and moves to page 2, line 13, or just part of that sentence?
I think it goes through line 11 after influence.
Okay, so you're not going to do the number 2 use of mailing lists on the first one.
Well, that's already in. We already still have that on page 2.
You want a motion on that as you're going through these things?
Well, yeah, I think that would be appropriate.
That's an error on our part. It was already adopted like that, so I don't...
Okay, so for the purposes of the record, Mr. Chairman, I would move that we insert in the proper place in section 110 the text beginning also on page 3, line 7, through the word influence on line 11. That's unanimous.
Any objections? Hearing no objections. That change is done. John, can we look at page 16, please? Did we change that at the top, number 4, that $1,000, did we change that on loans? Where I know we changed it in another, at the...
I think it was 1,000. It's been changed everywhere. I think it was 100 all three places previously, and it's now 1,000 on all three places.
Okay, I think that's probably appropriate. It's okay. I wasn't sure that we asked for that change.
I understood it as being 1,000 everywhere where it appeared.
At the bottom of page 16, on line 28, it says a statement filed with the Alaska Public Office Commission's public record. Are we talking about all statements, or are we just talking about category A and B statements?
We're talking, to make that clearer, I can say under 400 to 420.
I think that clarification should be there.
Now, what is the clarification?
Is that we're talking about this section.
What is the language you wish inserted, Mr. Chairman?
John, you want to rephrase?
Just after commission on line 29, put in under AS 2461 400 to 420.
Okay, Mr. Chairman.
Yes, ma'am. Representative Bloomberg.
I'll move that after commission we insert the language under AS 21.61.400-.420.
Right. Any objections to that change? Coming up there, John.
No, it's not on yet.
Okay, page 20. Representative Bloomberg, I know, had a thing on line 16. We spelled the word shall, and that should be may.
That, I understand, was a request to the drafter as to what was appropriate, or to the reviser, and the reviser indicated that shall is appropriate, and that if you had may, the commission would be able to thumb its nose at the chairman.
Ish?
I'm satisfied.
All right. Does anybody else in this document have any changes? I have two amendments I do want to take up, but if anybody else saw anything else that should be changed that was not or is wrong, Representative Baker?
Mr. Chairman, did we deal with the $10,000 issue?
We left the $10,000 issue at $10,000.
At $10,000.
Yes. Mm-hmm. And we made that language... No, yes, we did leave that at $10,000.
Yeah.
Mr. Chairman, why?
In the discussions with Representative Finkelstein and around the table, we just felt that we needed to have some figure, and that figure was as good as any other figure. We couldn't come up with an argument of having one any better. If known others, I'd like to take up an amendment in your packet by Representative Sherry Davis. John, we're talking about this amendment now, both these amendments. The deletions and the renumbering are going to be wrong.
Right.
Because of changing the document already.
All that stuff is basically in there for a floor amendment. On a committee amendment, it's not really crucial since it comes back to us, but we have to do it anyway.
I would entertain an amendment to accept Representative Davis's amendment.
Where is that?
Representative Davis' amendment, you should have it in front of you. It basically says when somebody's a lame duck, they can't take the trips unless the ledge council says so. Representative Greenberg.
I will oppose this amendment because as long as it is a legitimate trip, the legislature is a legitimate legislator and has state business. And if they shouldn't be taking it out in their final term, then they shouldn't be taking it out in their first term.
Well, I think it specifically says which people we're talking about. So those people that are not running and past the deadline or have already lost, and that what it's doing is setting up a time, a way for them to get around it. All they have to do is ask Ledge Council, and Ledge Council then would make that determination whether that is a good trip or not. I like the amendment myself.
I understand. Let me explain. You're in your final term. The moment that you enter that term and have announced an intention not to seek re-election. And it might very well be that somebody who is very conscientious and wants to be certain that everybody in the district knows so that people can start planning their lives and accordingly would announce very early in their second term. Remember, Governor Cooper announced 2 years before that he wasn't going to run. And what this would mean is that person would be unable to function as a legislator very legitimately. And I think that the travel that brought this to the people's attention was travel after the second session, after all of the legislative business had been conducted by those two legislators. And there was nothing further they were going to do officially. But even so, they might have been doing stuff unofficially. I don't know. I think this is overbroad and will make it very difficult. You and I happen to sit on legislative council.
But what if you dropped out number one and just left number two and three?
I had second session.
Oh, because then that would have just applied to the final interim. Yes, that would certainly make it more acceptable.
I would have no problem dropping number one.
Mr. Chairman, I support the concept of it. You two gentlemen are on legislative council and have a better idea how often they meet is.
Haven't been meeting very often. And when the
is that a
particular
problem with having to get the whole council together?
No, I believe that council could be. And now we're only talking about a small amount of really a short period of time here. So, what would happen is they would just be able to do a phone, to poll the council to see.
No, okay. Then, Mr. Chairman, may I ask a question of Mr. Dugan? The problem is that the legislative council may or may not meet. And here we have a circumstance where the chairman happens to be ill, and we're not meeting. We haven't for quite a while. The term approved by a majority of the legislative council, would that be read as implying the legislative council must formally meet, or would it allow the legislator to poll the legislative council? I'd like them to be able to poll the legislative council.
I would think it would be read to say a meeting, but I would also think that if Ledge Council adopted a policy saying that they could, I mean, it seems to me like something they could do themselves. I think it could be read either way. I don't think it would necessarily be read as limiting them.
But we could specifically put it here, John. Why don't we change that also that says either by meeting or poll?
Either by meeting or poll.
And that'll
I wouldn't
take the concern up.
Then,
Representative Greenberg?
I guess I should, since you have, I assume, moved the Davis Amendment here.
No, I have not moved the Davis Amendment. I am asking for a motion to move the amendment.
I will move it at the appropriate time with the changes we're talking about.
Okay.
And after the word council, it would say something conceptually, and John can do this, either by poll or in a formal meeting. That's on line three. And I will, when I move it, I'll also eliminate sub one. Now the others.
Sub one is eliminated and for discussion purposes, so when you move it, it's gone. Any other comments on it? President Greenberg?
And I assume that that second amendment to the amendment is also incorporated in my motion.
Correct.
I don't have any other discussion.
I'll take a motion.
I'll move the amendment as amended.
Is there objection? The amendment is, that objection included in the committee substitute?
And I guess for the purpose of the record, I should be listed as a co-sponsor of the amendment.
So noted. And I would like to bring up one other amendment. This is amendment number dated 2/19/91.
BY.
Bye-bye. Actually, this is an amendment that was through Representative Finkelstein that was proposed by Representative Donnelly. I don't feel real strongly. I know what he's getting at, but he's trying to get at a legal defense fund in this one. If people feel like we should include this, I have no problem. And if they don't have strong feelings, I have no problems letting this go to the Judiciary Committee without it, where Representative Donnelly can deal with it himself. Representative Greenberg.
I would feel more appropriate, since it is Representative Donnelly's amendment, if that we discuss it in the Judiciary Committee, where he can explain what is going on.
Representative Moyer.
Is there an intention, Chair, to move the bill today?
There is an attempt to move this bill.
We have 10 minutes for it. I would agree with Representative Greenberg.
Any objections to allowing, not taking up this amendment then?
With specifically indicating to Representative Donnelly that we just thought it was most appropriate for him to be able to explain.
We'll return this with a little memo telling him that we did not take it up without him here, and that we would ask that he deal with it in his committee, which is where it's going to next.
No, we didn't deal with the merits of it, which is
right.
The policy.
But it's time to vote.
We have before you then committee substitute for House Bill 4. As I've said, we've had extensive hearings on this bill. I think we've done a couple of major things to it. We've divided this bill, in essence, into three bills. Number one, we've taken the pay, all reference to pay and compensation out of this bill and moved it into the Pay Compensation Committee bill. And number two, we've left all the ethics issues in it, and it is an ethics bill. And number three, we've taken the finance campaign reform, we've pulled it out, and we have a new bill into our committee that will deal with that specific issue. Therefore, as I look at it, we have three major issues that will be dealt with, all three of them on their own merits, up or down. And that is people will have that opportunity to divide them out and vote on them in that way. Representative Moyer.
Have we adopted this?
The CS has been adopted. And if people have comments, if not, I'm prepared to take a motion. Representative Breckman?
I would move that it be pulled out of committee.
There is a motion on the floor to move committee substitute for House Bill 4 out of committee with individual recommendations.
As amended.
As amended. Are there objections to the motion? Committee substitute to House Bill 4 is moved from committee. And I want to commend this committee. I believe you have done a very good job in working on this bill.
Especially the chairman. Yeah.
Thank you.
Devoted many hours.
That's a gift.
If I could go on. The next meeting of House State Affairs Committee will be Monday, March 11th. At this time, we did have on our agenda further consideration of House Bill 4. That will be scratched as we're moving on. House Bill 47 relating to PERS benefits for youth center employees. HJR 22 relating to opposing reduction of federal COLA. Senate Bill 24 relating to an appropriation longevity bonus program. Senate Bill 32 relating to PERS benefits for youth center employees. SJR 15 relating to opposing federal COLA reductions. Please note that a couple of these are duplicates. We have a Senate and a House bill, and I want to bring them both together at the same time. And also, I think you should note there is an appropriation bill from the Senate, so it has already passed the Senate, that you should give your attention to Senate Bill 24 that I would like to move out of our committee, but since it is an appropriation bill, already passed one body, you should pay particularly close attention to it. Also, since we did not get to House Bill 67, we will take that up at that time also. We do have a CS, and I'd like you to review that. Got any further? We're adjourned. 9:52.